This conference will now be recorded.
Okay, that's our 11:30 starting bell, so I think we can get started. All right, good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order. First item of business is to remind everyone that in accordance with the governor's executive order regarding recording public meetings held via teleconference, this meeting is being recorded, and the recording will be posted on Chief's website within 7 days of the meeting. And when you do speak, it would be very helpful for the minutes if you identify yourself prior to asking a question or making a statement. So first item of business is getting a roll call so we have accurate minutes. So when I call your name, please signify that you're on the call saying aye or here or present. For the record, I'm Peter Lisi, Chair of the Board. Ben Barnes, Ben on the call?
Here.
Thank you. Martin Budd?
Here.
Andrew Foster?
Present.
Daryl Hill? Daryl Hill? Okay. Steve Kittowitz?
Here.
Julie Savino?
Here.
Thank you. Okay, that's for the board. Others, Jeanette Weldon?
Here.
Denise Aguilera?
Here.
Kevin Berry? Kevin Berry? No. Deb Galley?
Here.
Josh Herlock?
Here.
Harley Levin?
Harley's working on getting her phone number to work.
All right. Joanne Mackowitz?
Here.
Cynthia Peoples?
I'm here.
Thank you. Shannon Reynolds?
Here.
Natalia Rosio?
Natalia Rosio?
Here.
Thank you. Kara Stewart?
Here.
Thank you. All right, others. Judith Blank?
Here.
Thank you. Ben McGuire?
Here.
Glenn Ryback? Rybacki, I'm sorry. No? Joe Santoro?
Here.
And Tim Webb?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there others on the call whose name I didn't call? And if so, could you please identify yourself and the organization you represent?
Dan Jones.
Peter, this is.
I'm sorry, guess one at a time.
Katie Belukis from Barry Dunn.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Lawrence Davis.
Okay. No one else?
Dan Jones.
Lawrence Davis.
I heard Dan's name, and then the other individual was?
Lawrence Davis.
Lawrence. Thank you, Lawrence.
And I got here a minute or two late, so I don't know if my name was called previously, but this is Matt Rosen from Naugatuck High School.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Okay.
Peter Daryl Hill, I apologize. I stepped away. I assumed you called me and saw my video box.
We did call you, so I'm glad to have you on the line. Thank you. All right, if there are no others, I'd like to move on to the agenda. First item is the approval of the minutes from September 17th. I hope people have taken a look at them and reviewed them. Marty, was that you?
I moved that we adopt them as presented.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
And we got a second. Are there any corrections or edits or comments on the minutes from September 17th? All those in favor of adopting the minutes as presented, say aye.
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 Is anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you. The minutes pass unanimously. Ethics training, Nancy Nicolescu. Nancy, are you on the line?
Good morning, everyone.
Great.
How are you? My name's Nancy Nicolescu, and I'm the Director of Education and Communications for the Office of State Ethics. The board has invited me for your annual ethics presentation, and it, of course, gives me great pleasure to provide you with this presentation, which I know that no doubt it will guide you in your role as distinguished public officials and members of CHESLA. So, and congratulations to any new members that were appointed to the board. I'm actually going to do a little training today on following the ethical compass and quickly go over our what is ethics and what it means to us. And ethics are personal. You know that they're different for each and every one of us based on our culture and our religion and what we do for work. I love this quote by Roy Disney. It's not hard to make decisions when you know what your values are. He was Walt Disney's brother. They're legal, a specific set of rules. And when we're talking about the code of ethics, we're talking about the law itself and how they apply to you in your positions. Ethics are value oriented. You've heard me say this quote before. It's one of my absolute favorites. Knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what is right to do. And I believe that as public officials and state employees, we get up every day, go to work, and want to do the best possible job that we can. Ethics are practical. They're what you do when nobody's looking. Mark Twain said, and it's never wrong to do the right thing. A little bit of our agency, we were created in 77 after Watergate. We were recreated in 2005 in the sweeping government reforms after the Roland scandals. We're what they call a civil enforcement agency because we watch government. And we have a board similar to yours that oversees our agency. And they're appointed, they meet monthly, very much in the same way. For this training, I actually thought I would do something a little bit different because I'm going to be with your group, not only today, but again in on the 18th and then on December 17th. And so I really wanted to talk about what motivates people to commit unethical acts and give a little history of how Connecticut was dubbed Corrupticut. And so due to the high scandals, the high profile scandals in the early 2000s, that's when Connecticut was dubbed Corrupticut. And so I'm just gonna kind of throw a couple people at you that there have been problems for a long time. And in the 1930s, Frank Hayes was deemed a villain. He was Waterbury's mayor. He was also lieutenant governor from 1935 to 1939. And he was convicted along with 26 others and served 6 years in prison. And I, you know, kind of the fun fact here was that it's actually Sherwood Rowland, John Rowland's grandfather, who was the one that uncovered that he had been taking millions of dollars from the city. And he won his election against the city's comptroller by only 30 votes. So that was Frank Hayes, and he was steering money to contractors. He also used a banker to launder the money. So there was a little bit of corruption there. In the 1960s, we had Thomas Dodd, who had used his personal campaign funds for personal use. And he was really the first, one of the first individuals that was censured by the US Senate. And it really ruined his career. It ruined his life as a politician. And there were definitely some stories about him and some sympathies with him in that he wasn't leading a life of luxury. He really was using the extra funds to make some mortgage payments. He had a very large family. I forget how many children he had exactly. So that was Thomas Dodd. And his son, Christopher Dodd, and he had some other children as well. There was an interesting book if you want some some information about that. I'm a little bit of a geek, so I'm hoping that you're enjoying this as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. And then in the 1990s, we had Paul Sylvester, who was the state treasurer, and he got caught racketeering and, you know, bribery and actually moving the state's pension over, I believe it was like $20 billion. I mean, this was like an explosive event. And he actually kind of became a snitch. He faced up to 40 years in prison, but then he agreed to cooperate in taking down government officials. And he spent 4 years and 3 months in prison. And we can't forget that this was really an important time right before the sweeping reforms. And so that brings us to John Rowland, who was this rising star. He took his office, he was very young, he was 23, he was a legislator. In 85, he was at the age of 27, he was a member of Congress. On November 5th, 2002, he was at the peak of his political career and he won his third term for governor. And shortly after that was the beginning of the federal probe against him. And then he resigned. And then in 2004, he pled guilty to, you know, one felony count of conspiracy to commit theft, tax fraud, for accepting more than $100,000 in gifts from contractors. And a lot of you remember the story that, you know, there was hot tubs and there was tickets. And the code of ethics covers public officials. It covers lobbyists, contractors, those that are seeking to do business with state agencies. And so this type of behavior was not allowed by any means. And so on March 18th, 2005, Governor Rowland was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in state prison. In federal prison. And so what I like to say as we go through ethics training is that, you know, we can have an ethics training every month and it's every year the way that we do. And it really is a reminder of what the rules are. But if you following the rules is up to you as an individual. We can't really give you ethics or teach you ethics. So here we are 10 years later, Governor Rowland, to the day after his first conviction, was convicted again for 7 crimes. 5 of them were felonies, and it had to do with working on a campaign and receiving money through a nursing home. And it was just we were saddened to see this happen again. So these were the campaign election laws 10 years later. And that's how Connecticut became Connecticut. But so why are we here? Why do we have this training every year? So following all of the scandals, Governor Rowell issued Executive Order Number 1. And in Executive Order Number 1, she said, we need to have ethics audits and agencies need to have ethics statements. Chesla has its own ethics statement. We need to let people know that when they're starting their positions with agencies or even interviewing for those agencies or seeking that employment, that they're going to have to comply with the code of ethics. We have to have them acknowledge receipt and agree to comply. And then every agency assigned an ethics liaison, and your ethics liaison is Denise. So those were some of the things in her executive order number 1. There were other reforms as part of that, that individuals needed to file statements of financial interest. And most of you and all of the board members file SFI. There were non-restricted donor gift limits that went into play. that you couldn't accept gifts if you were a public official or state employee. And then there were even more restrictions. They added state treasurer restrictions. Happened with our previous treasurer, Sylvester, didn't happen again. So the list goes on and on as far as those sweeping reforms following the scandals. So you get the idea that even though we go down through this maze of corruption, that the state of Connecticut is always trying to make sure that the ethics codes are responsive to those things. And it's important for you to know that there are limits when it comes to gifts, when it comes to conflicts of interest, use of state position, you know, other employment. And even when you leave state service, there are revolving door provisions. And so our number one rule is always to get advice. And there are a number of ways to get advice. Of course, you can speak with your ethics liaison. You can call our agency. Our legal division attorneys are there to serve you. And we're available. In terms of gifts, I'm not going to go into all of the gift exceptions today and all of those things because I know you've just heard them, and I'll share the top 10 rules with you. But as a general rule, we really shouldn't accept gifts while in our positions. If we have a conflict of interest, if a board member has a conflict of interest, if your action is going to financially benefit you, your family, or a business for which you're associated, you need to abstain or recuse from acting. And if you have a conflict, please check in with the ethics liaison, Denise, or give our office a call and get your advice in writing so that you can rely on it. When you leave state position, when you leave your position as a board member or as an employee of CHESLA, there are two lifetime bans and 2 1-year bans. And some of them, the lifetime bans do have to do if you were significantly involved in contracts. You can't switch sides. You can never disclose confidential information that you obtained in your state's work. Your 1-year bans is that you have to cool off for a year before you come back before your former agency. And then also you cannot accept a position with anyone that you entered into a contract with for 1 year. And for the employees of CHESLA, it's 1 year from leaving state service. And for the board members, it's 1 year from entering into the contract. Ethics enforcement. Our legal division will give you legal advice. There is a strong firewall between our legal division and our enforcement division. So if you do call for advice and you haven't gotten it completely right, our legal division attorneys are prohibited from going over to the ethics enforcement side to let them know, you know, guess who called and what's going on. An ethics complaint, an ethics action can ruin your career, as I hope that I've displayed for you today. We do have strong confidentiality provisions with our complaints. All of our complaints remain confidential during the investigation and the evaluation period of that complaint. If a judge trial referee makes a probable cause determination, then and only then does the complaint become public. If the respondent settles or enters into a consent agreement, it would be public. If the complaint is dismissed, it remains confidential. If our Citizens Ethics Advisory Board finds that there's been a violation, they can order you to comply with the code in the future, file any required reports or statements, and pay civil penalties of up to $10,000 per violation. If it's criminal, like felon bribery, things of that nature, those items would be referred to the Chief State's Attorney's Office for their action. So that's a little bit about our enforcement division. So today, you know, I know that I gave you so much so quickly, but hopefully you understand the rules. Denise will probably be able to share our official guide with all of the statutory sites. But what are your rules? Make those decisions today. What will you do? What won't you do? If you don't, then you can't get into trouble for exceeding the gift limits and things of that nature. I love the quote from Douglas MacArthur that you're remembered for the rules that you break. Certainly true. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them now, or you can call us later. I will also be sending over our top 10 ethics rules. I know that many of you already have the little cards that have these rules on them, and I'm happy to send some extras for your members.
Okay. Any questions for Nancy? Nancy, this is Peter, and I'll just say I've been through several of your annual ethics trainings, and I appreciate the little different spin you put on it each year. You still send the message to take this stuff very, very seriously, and there can be some dire consequences if you don't. So that message comes through loud and clear, but I appreciate the different approaches you use and some of the different quotes you give us and the takeaways. So thank you for putting a little bit of variety into it.
Thank you.
Anything else for Nancy? Questions? Okay, thank you, Nancy. All right, next item of business, I'm gonna turn it over to the folks from Barry Dunn to review the internal audit.
Good morning. This is Rob Smalley with Barry Dunn. I don't think we've had the pleasure of being in front of the Cheslett Group. Barry Dunn, as maybe some of you know, is the largest CPA firm headquartered in New England. We've been doing work for CHIFA for a few years now, but like I said, I don't think I've had the pleasure of being in front of the Cheslett folks. Happy to be here. Thank you for the invite. We've got two reports to go over today. The first, I believe, is on vendor oversight, and the second on grants management. I'm happy to have Katie Belukas here today with us. She managed these audits for me, and it's happy to go over them. I'll kick it over to you, Katie.
Yes, thank you, Rob. So as a result of previous risk assessments that we have performed, we had selected two areas from Cheslett to review in this past year. And so the first area that I'm going to go over is the outside vendors. So as you're aware, Cheslett uses outside vendors to carry out activities related to the servicing as well as the origination of loans. So as a result, as part of our audit procedures, we reviewed the user agreements for those vendors for key deliverables as well as the terms of those agreements. We also reviewed the guidelines for actually administering and originating loans within the in-school as well as the refinance loans, and those were also in the user agreements. We also reviewed what's called a SOC report, which is the System of Organization Controls. These vendors are required to undergo audits, and a SOC report is their audit report that lists out the internal controls of that organization. We also reviewed one student loan that had been originated for the in-school loan program, as well as the refinance loan program, for compliance with the program guidelines in order to verify that the loans were being originated under both programs in accordance with the terms. We also reviewed payments that had been made on an in-school loan as well as a refinance loan because those payments are collected and reported by the vendors. And then we also spent some time reviewing the transition and the reconciliation between the outside vendors related to the refinance loan, because in October 2019, the organization changed servicer or changed vendors that they were using for the origination and the servicing aspect. So we did review the reconciliation that was done to verify that the data came over that had been in one system into the other one. So on to the next page, you'll see that as a result of our procedures, we did note one item one area to strengthen in the existing procedures. So we did note that CHESLA has a process in place to obtain that SOC report, the audit report of each individual vendor. And they also have a process in place to verify that the key terms and deliverables in the user agreements are being adhered to. But the item that we found that could strengthen their existing process would be to also review and evaluate the complementary user controls that are identified in those reports. Those are the controls that the third-party vendor has identified as controls that CHESLA should have in place and that they're not included in their report. So that is an area that we think that CHESLA should incorporate into their annual process of reviewing these reports to ensure that all of the controls are in their existing control structure. And on to the next page. So as a result of our testing, we were able to rate CHESLA's internal controls over the oversight of outside vendors as adequate. You'll see that there's four different rankings. They range from satisfactory to inadequate. And so adequate just states that there was one minor finding. It wasn't a high rating. So we were able to issue an adequate opinion or an adequate rating on that. And unless there's any other questions, I'll move over to the scholarship program. All right. And so the second item that we reviewed this year was the scholarship program. We focused on the money that's allocated for CHESLA to award. We did not focus on the funds that had previously been awarded to the colleges and universities to grant because we understand that that program had been discontinued. So we did just focus on the pool of money that the CHESLA committee oversees and grants. So as a result, or within our procedures, we reviewed the policies and procedures related to the scholarship program. We also tested one student for the undergrad program as well as the certificate scholarships for adherence to the procedures for awarding the scholarships. We looked into the eligibility criteria to verify that the students that had been selected were eligible to participate in the scholarship program. And then we also reviewed to ensure that there was proper approval from the scholarship committee on those scholarships. So as a result of our testing, we did not have any recommendations. We felt that the internal controls were properly designed and were operating as designed as a result of our testing. And you'll note on the next page that we were able to issue in a satisfactory rating on the internal controls over scholarships, which is the highest rating that we can give. So does anyone have any questions on either one of these reports?
Any questions? Nothing? All right. Well, thank you very much for your work and appreciate the positive feedback on both areas.
Yes, thank you. And I definitely want to thank the team for helping, being very responsive in this process. It was done entirely remotely, given the work from home environment. And so I definitely want to thank the team for providing us all the necessary documentation to get this work done.
Okay. All right. Unless there's questions, we can move on. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Have a nice day.
You also.
Thank you, folks.
Carly, financial report.
Yes, thank you. If you can please turn to page 22 of your board packet, we'll take a look at the agency's income statement. Okay. For the 3 months ending September 30th, 2020, revenues over expenses before non-operating income and expenses were $32,227. And revenues over expenses after non-operating income and expenses were $33,240. Total year-to-date revenues were $855 under budget, and total year-to-date expenses were $24,133 under budget. And this is primarily due to consultant fee and chief of support services, which are under budget at this point. Any questions regarding the agency?
No.
I'll move on to page 27 of your board packet. And we'll take a look at the two resolutions. So under the 1990 resolution, total change in net position before the transfer is an increase of $8,832. Bond issue costs are the primary reason for the small increase in net position. And the total change in net position after a transfer is a decrease of $185,071. The total change in net position for the 2019 resolution before the transfer is a decrease of $61,770. And the primary reason for that decrease is the allowance for loan loss. The total change in net position after the transfer is an increase of $132,134. The funds that were transferred from the 2017 A revenue fund to the 2020 B debt service fund were transferred in error by the trustee. These funds were transferred back to the 17A revenue account last month. And I did reiterate to the trustee that funds cannot be transferred between the two resolutions. So we should not have this issue going forward. Any questions?
Why did the trustee make the transfer originally? What was the trustee thinking?
The debt, sir, it was to fund into the debt service fund. Every month we'll put in 1/6 of the interest and 1/12 of the principal that's due. So that's what their thinking was. It just couldn't come out of the 1990 resolution.
So they just took it from the wrong resolution?
Correct.
Okay.
Who's the trustee?
U.S. Bank.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So lastly, if you can turn to page 30, please. We'll quickly go over the other programs. So the total change in that position for the scholarship fund for this quarter was an increase of $157. And total change in net position for the non-bond refi program was an increase of $9,719. That's all I have. Any questions?
No. Any questions for Carly? Okay. Actually, Carly, this is Peter. I do have a question on the transfer that had to be corrected by the trustee. And
yes.
Admittedly, I don't know the mechanics behind it, but it would seem to me that that is a somewhat regular and routine service that they have to do. And if there was, for lack of a better word, if there was a mistake this time, I mean, are we concerned that there might be a problem going forward, or have they corrected it? I mean, it seems like a rather routine function or mundane function to make that transfer. And if it was messed up, I guess, I mean,
I, you know, do check it monthly. So that is how I caught it. So I will continue to, as I'm going through the activity every month, we'll continue to make sure that that doesn't happen again. I did let them know that when they do need to take funds, that it has to be within that resolution. And I think I'm kind of guessing what happened was, they were used to everything being in the 1990 resolution, where in the 2019, they never had to transfer any funds from a different account. It would come from the revenue of the 19A to the debt service. So I think that might have been where the confusion came in.
Okay, actually that explanation helps a lot. Thank you. And I had no doubt that you were checking on them every month. I was more concerned what was going on at their end. But I appreciate that explanation. That helps me out a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else for Carly? Okay. I think we're going to move on to Executive Director's Report. And Jeanette, you going to start off?
Yes. Thanks, Peter. The primary focus of my report is on the legislative agenda for the upcoming session. But before I get into that, I wanted to congratulate the CHESLA staff on the very positive audit results with regard to the scholarship program. And I think it's particularly noteworthy that, you know, this was a new program. We started it, really, you know, built it from scratch. And I think it's quite commendable that it got such a clean audit. With regard to the legislative agenda, which is was provided in your board package, we have three items that we put forth in the summary. And I just want to start by saying that when we are considering, you know, what to propose as a legislative agenda, we're really looking at things. Obviously, first we look at what are some administrative type things that perhaps we want to clean up. We think about our strategic plan and what are some of the initiatives that we might want to try to move forward with. And then we also look at state priorities and what can we do that could potentially help support some of those state priorities. And then just in general, you know, general state of affairs in society and how CHESLA might be able to play a role. So with regard to this year's legislative agenda, the first item, minority teacher recruitment student loan subsidy program, we really felt that this proposal would fit in a lot of those buckets in terms of strategic plan, supporting state priorities, and then also addressing, you know, larger societal issues such as racial inequality. And so this proposal is actually patterned, I think I've mentioned this at prior meetings, it's patterned after an earlier proposal to incentivize new graduates to enter into particular fields. And so the last in the last session, we presented another variation on this, which was to incentivize new grads to actually stay in Connecticut and work in Connecticut. In the current climate, the thought was that such an incentive program could actually be better used to incentivize minority teacher recruitment. And actually, in the last session, a legislator who happens to be one of the co-chairs of the bonding committee actually suggested this as a potential use of a CHESLA incentive. So the proposal, the language is provided in the board packet. It would provide an interest rate subsidy on a CHESLA loan if a minority teacher recruit commits to teaching in a Connecticut public school. This is a high priority item for the Department of Education. And the student would, this is a subsidy that would occur after the student graduates, so it would have no impact on, you know, them taking out a CHESLA loan at the stated interest rate. It would be after they graduate. If they commit to teaching in Connecticut, the subsidy would apply. The legislation leaves it open in terms of developing all of the parameters so that we can be consistent with Department of Ed and administration sort of constraints. The interest rate subsidy would require state funding. So the concept is the state would potentially provide, you know, issue GO bonds that would provide for the subsidy, and that dollars would come into the trust for that purpose. Are there any questions or Jeanette, comments?
Right, Jeanette, would you like board approval on each one of these? I think it's a wonderful idea. I'm happy to move that the board approve of your moving forward with this legislative proposal.
Denise, do we need board approval on the legislative agenda, or is it more of a consensus type item?
I don't I think it's more of a consensus. I don't think you need a formal vote, but if you would like to take one, you can.
Well, let me say, amending the statutes to start a new program is something at a pretty high policy level, which I do think the board, I don't think this is controversial, but as a matter of procedure, I think it's good before the authority takes any major new program on or proposes a new program that the board approve it.
Marty, I would agree with that. I'm just wondering if, you know, there's a lot of details that need to be worked out on this program, as Jeanette referred to. I mean, the parameters have got to be hashed out and discussed and decided, right, agreed upon. I mean, does it make sense to wait until the finer points and the details are all agreed upon, and then it comes back to the board for adoption? But I agree with you, it's significant enough to warrant, you know, a board vote.
And Peter, the only thing I would add with regard to that type of process is the way the legislation is proposed is that the parameters in terms of how much the subsidy is and over will it be for the life of their loans or maybe only 5 years.
How long does the person need to be teaching?
Right. And so, but all of that, the legislation is written that's developed through a memorandum of understanding with the State Department of Education. So the law, you know, if we're successful with moving this forward, the law would pass. And then after the law passes, then we would be developing the memorandum of understanding.
I would make the resolution that we approve this in concept and authorize the staff to work with the legislature and other government offices to do the details.
I would agree. So is that a motion, Marty?
Yes.
You're moving that. Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
And was that Julie?
Yep, that was me.
Okay. Yep. All right, so there's a motion and a second to move this forward. Are there other discussion items or discussion questions for Jeanette or staff on this?
I just have one comment. It's not directly related to this, but Jeanette, I think that that idea that when we met with the Office of Higher Education, it seems so long ago, it was only slightly before the pandemic, that I think that concept is going to be bouncing around and popping up again to add certificate programs to our loan business. I think that concept is going to pop up again in the legislature.
Right. I am aware that that's something that's sort of bouncing around within the administration.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not, you know, it was sort of hinted at as something that the administration would be putting forward as, you know, CHESLA now, your statute is changed so that you're going to do the following. And the gist of it is what is being discussed, you know, within the governor's office is the notion of right now we can only provide loans for programs from nonprofit degree granting institutions. And so with regard to certificate programs and the use of certificate programs, which are a very major part of the governor's workforce development initiative, the question is that too limiting in terms of being able to assist those students in completing those programs? So for example, I mean, so part of, and they really are focused on certain types of certificates. So it's certificates in technology, certificates in healthcare, certificates in manufacturing skills. So it is not, you know, they're not focused on, you know, other types of certificates. They're really focused on those workforce development certificates. So it remains to be seen whether or not you know, the governor's office will put forth that legislation, but that would, you know, be something that would be, you know, proposed by them as opposed to being proposed through CHESLA.
This is right. Marty, bud. I want to say I think it's wonderful that people are considering CHESLA and that we're considering CHESLA to reach out and support public policy issues that seem very important to our state. And so I think this is a great general direction of CHESLA moving. And so I just wanted to say I want to encourage whatever we can to use CHESLA to help the state achieve its public policy goals.
I agree. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah. This is Andrew. So I have a question. So I think, Jeanette, in the past we've seen where you've presented legislative agenda, and so then you've laid this out and you've gone to, you know, make the proposal, and you've come back with sort of feedback and outcome to the board, and then we go forward depends on the outcome. So at this point, are we creating a precedence to say that any legislative agenda going forward that we should vote on it or approve, or is it just because of the sort of this particular issue at the moment?
You know, I think if there's a legislative initiative that somehow binds CHESLA to a certain business practice or initiative going forward, it's probably a good idea to board approval.
Okay. No, I just brought that up.
And this is Daryl. How to say this? Supportive of the legislative agenda in general, however, with items two and three, maybe not all of three, but part of three, being relative to the treasurer and his role with regard to the special capital reserve fund, the approval of it along with OPM, as well as the debt limit, or the increasing the debt limit in number three from 300 to 500,000. I think I'll abstain from voting on the legislative agenda so as to not appear that the treasurer's office is approving of either of those legislative agenda items.
Okay. I will say, just as a point of information, items two and three were also in the legislative agenda that was proposed last session. And we did have discussions with the treasurer's office specifically about item two, and also making them aware of the proposal to go from a total amount of 300 million to 500 million. So just wanted to make that known.
Okay.
Not that we're exactly near the 300 million anyway.
Correct. It's huge. We're thinking long term, right?
I guess so.
But it's not like it's a critical item. Yes.
Right.
It became problematic. Absolutely. So just briefly touch on, as I said, the items two and three were in last session's agenda. With regard to 3B, which is clarifying the definition of education assistance, that's really a matter of right now, it is specifically defined as grants or loans, and we are seeking to just make it, you know, generic in terms of education assistance, you know, financial assistance, obviously, but in whatever form that might take, just to be able to evolve with the industry in terms of how education is financed. Mm-hmm. And then what I wanted to do is just to briefly turn to Dan Gingy. Dan is the communications and government relations specialist at CHIFA, and he will be working with CHESLA and MCHIFA to move forward this legislative agenda. So Dan, do you just want to talk about your process?
Yes, thanks, Jeanette. I just wanted to briefly touch on the legislative outreach activities regarding these legislative items. We do have a meeting scheduled with representatives from the governor's office, as well as the Office of Policy and Management, on the 20th. And the purpose of that meeting will be to review the legislative proposals approved by the board. In drafting these legislative proposals, we've also solicited feedback from a handful of state agencies, including the Department of Economic and Community Development, as well as the State Department of Education. And as we move closer towards the legislative session, we'll begin to circle back with these state agencies. In addition to the outreach to state agencies, we've also begun the process of reaching out to key legislators in important committees. And these would include the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee, the Higher Education Committee, which is, of course, the Committee of Cognizance for CHESLA, as well as the Education Committee. And again, as we move closer towards the legislative session, we'll continue the process of outreach and education regarding these items as we work to move them forward.
Again, Marty Budd, for the record, changing our statutes or statutes that are relevant to us, again, I think is something that the board should approve. Of course, it's our constituent document. It's like changing our charter or our constitution. But I'm not sure, Dan, when the proper time for the board to take action. Maybe now, as to the general concept, leaving to you and the rest of the staff to fill in the details, or will there be a time when we actually have a legislative proposal passed by a committee? Maybe you can help here as to when the board ought to insert its view.
I think for purposes of moving these proposals forward, it would be helpful for the board to offer their opinion on them prior to the start of the legislative session. But given the dynamic nature of the legislature, things can often change regarding particular legislative proposals. So I think at some point it could be a possibility that what the board is reviewing right now could change. And I think at that point, if it does change during the legislative process, we would bring it back to the board for your review.
Thank you. So I'm happy to move. Go ahead. These proposals and concept. I'm sorry, Jeanette, go ahead.
I just wanted to make mention of, you know, we did include the draft legislation in the package. The CHESLA board does meet, you know, quarterly, although we do have, you know, some exceptions to that. And we are planning to schedule, I believe, to put on the schedule a January meeting. But just want to make sure we're also mindful of the fact that as things are moving through the legislative session, and given our meeting schedule, we might have to have some additional or impromptu, you know, meetings if we're trying to have board approval before something gets tweaked in the course of, you know, trying to get it through a committee.
Well, my proposal is that we approve these in concept and fully authorize the staff to work out the details and negotiate what points they think are advisable. So my concern is just the board viewing this in concept, and of course leaving the staff to work out the details. And I might add a request that the staff inform the board, just inform the board of any significant changes to what they've seen before as they develop.
Yep. I agree. Just a question for Denise on process. Denise, can the board vote on these all three in one one vote, or do we need three separate votes?
I think you can vote on all three, and then just we can make a note in the abstention that Daryl will be abstaining from three.
Okay, fine.
Well, I will make that motion applicable to all three, with authorizing the staff to work on the details and informing the board as significant changes occur to what they've previously presented.
Yep. Thank you, Marty. Is there a second on that?
I'll second.
Is that Julie?
Yep, that's me.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Are there any further questions or discussion? Marty, I think that's a great motion, a great way to go forward, so thank you. Anything else? All right, all those in favor of the motion as presented, please signify by saying aye.
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 Anyone, any votes against? Any abstentions?
Daryl Hill.
Daryl, understood. Thank you. All right, motion carries. All right, thank you. Jeanette, was there anything else, or should we move on to the portfolio review?
We can move on to the portfolio review, thanks.
All right, Josh, the floor is yours.
All right, thank you, Peter. So I will start on page 43 of the board package regarding the loan disbursement data. But before I get into the loan disbursement data, I just wanted to provide the board with some portfolio statistics regarding the in-school portfolio. So currently the in-school portfolio, just 0.55% are in a natural disaster forbearance. Just 0.17% are in a hardship forbearance. So very minimal across the board. And we also saw delinquencies drop from about 20% in September to 13% in October, and about three quarters, so 74% of those in-school delinquencies are less than 30 days past due. So overall, the portfolio seems to be performing well. And then, is that a question? No, okay, so on page 43, we have the loan disbursement data. For the first quarter, the in-school loan program disbursed about $6.9 million, which represents a 32% decrease compared to quarter one of fiscal 20. You know, due to the COVID climate, that's the responsibility for that decrease. I would also say on a positive note, however, our loan volume for October exceeded the entirety of quarter two for fiscal year 2020. So the hope is here with a decent November and December, we would be recouping some of that volume that we lost in quarter one. And then I will now move to page 45 and just touch on the market segment data. So for the Connecticut schools, we have status quo at the top with Sacred Heart, UConn, and Quinnipiac. And Sacred Heart at this point has a sizable advantage. So good information there. Moving forward on page 46, we have the 2020B in-school comparison to the cash flow assumptions through September. We're about $650,000 behind the cash flow assumptions. However, in October, the in-school loan program disbursed about $1.4 $1 million, which would bring Chesil about even with the cash flow assumptions through October. Moving on to page 47, we have the 2019A refi program comparison to the cash flow assumptions. Through September 2020, the refi program is about $571,000 behind the cash flow assumptions. I would also like to note, going off of that, you know, there's really no worry here. As I followed up with after our September board meeting, Chesil is comfortable with 2019A that we have enough revenue to then carry us through our first principal payment on November 15th of 2021. So no concern here. Before I move on, I would also say, in terms of a loan loss reserve for the in-school and refi programs, Carly and I met here at the end of the quarter to determine if we need to make adjustments to the loan loss reserve due to the COVID environment. And we determined that was not needed because from what we can see, the revenue on the in-school program and refi program has stayed pretty consistent all the way through the pandemic.
Josh, Marty, Bud. Yep. Two questions. One, why in the in-school program did we suddenly get such a big bump in October and we didn't do so well before that?
I don't have a great answer there. I would just say, you know, due to COVID, this year has been incredibly different. The timing of the applications and disbursements have not necessarily been right on schedule with all the uncertainty with the schools. So I just think it's a strange year due to the COVID environment, and we have people coming to apply for a loan at different points in times.
Well, second question is with respect to the refi. I am a little concerned. Yes, I understand that we won't default on our bonds next year, but how about in 2022 and 2023? Do you see a pickup in the refi? You know, I understand that the federal loans have, during the COVID period, I think gone to zero. So people are not going to refi zero loans. But I am a little concerned about the longer term and medium term future of the refi program.
Right. Certainly a fair question. And from my understanding right now, the federal program is 0% through the end of December. And, you know, hopefully that's not extended further. I would also say, you know, some of this will be touched on later in Shannon's update, but we're continuing to market the program. We're continuing to market our employer student loan repayment program. Jeanette and I have had meetings with, I believe, two CHIFA clients who are potentially interested in the employer student loan repayment program, which in turn we then would assume would increase the refi CT volume. I would also say, as part of our marketing with Fox 61, they gave us a little bit of bonus this year, in which a couple of days throughout the year, we are afforded a homepage takeover of the site. And one of the days Shannon and I selected was yesterday, being as though, you know, election day was November 3rd. And anyone that went to fox61.com yesterday, there was Chesil information banners all throughout the site. Essentially, somebody would not be able to escape that. And so Shannon and I thought that was a good opportunity. And then I would also say, off of that, I did receive two or three calls yesterday from parents looking to refinance Parent PLUS loans. And if you recall, with our refinance program, a nice benefit we have there is that we allow the graduated student to refinance those Parent PLUS loans so the parent can then be off the hook and the student can take responsibility. And many students and families have kind of a handshake agreement that the graduated student would be paying that Parent PLUS loan anyways. So I agree with your question. I do have a little bit of concern, but I think with all the outreach we're doing, the employer student loan repayment program, you know, I think we're going to continue to push the envelope to make sure that these proceeds are out the door.
If I could just add to that, you know, while we may have some, you know, any concerns we might have are related to just, you know, the success of marketing efforts, but with regard to our ability to pay debt service, the reason why I'm comfortable that we are not in any way at risk of not being able to pay debt service is one thing to keep in mind. When we created the 2019 trust, we put into it about $7 million, $6 or $7 million worth of refi loans that already existed that were not funded with bond proceeds. They were funded, if you recall, from CSLF transfers. So those loans were put into the trust as equity. So that equity is in there generating revenue that is available to pay debt service on the refi taxable bonds. And then also, this is something, you know, we're monitoring the situation. You know, we're always looking at how the trust is operating relative to the cash flows. We have regular discussions with our financial advisor. And ultimately, if loans are not originated, we have bond proceeds, we would redeem bonds. So between the ability to redeem bonds with unused proceeds and the equity that was put into the trust generating revenue that is available to pay debt service, and we're not just relying on loans originated with bond proceeds, those are the sort of structural things that you know, make me quite comfortable that, you know, we're in no way in a situation where we have to worry about, are we going to be able to make our next debt service payment.
Well, it's clear, Marty, but it's clear that we don't have to worry about 2021, as Josh said. But I think if we don't have further origination of loans, it might be useful to have a little study about the parity in the taxable bonds that we used for this purpose. So maybe if originations don't pick up by January or March, maybe we could have a report on how this bond issue is doing.
This is Mr. Chair. This is Tim Webb with Hilltop Securities. That is in process. We've reached out to Bank of America Merrill Lynch to update the cash flows that were run back in May when we closed the 20 transaction. And part of that would be to update the originations and to project when new originations would occur. So I view that as something that will continue ongoing as we move into 2021. And obviously, to the extent that we were unsuccessful in originating the refi CT loans, we wouldn't want to eat into the equity, so we would do a redemption. But we're keeping an eye on that. I've talked with Jeanette a number of times, and we have the cash flows in the works to do exactly what you suggest, Mr. Budd.
Thank you very much. So I look forward to seeing him for our January meeting.
Yes. Thank you. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I'll continue here. So on page 48, we have the refi CT loan disbursement data fiscal year comparison. So as you can see, quarter one was low at about 273,000. That's down about half a million from quarter one of fiscal 20. I would also say that in terms of October disbursements, for refi. We did disperse $156,000just in October, which is a nice month overall when you compare that to the entirety of quarter two for fiscal 20. So hopefully we can continue to push those proceeds out the door. Moving on, I will then go to, I'll skip ahead. I will go to page 52, the performance dashboard. And I just really wanted to touch on the UAS servicing performance. Overall, good performance over the past few months. UAS has met all the standards. In July, the average speed of answer was slightly over the standard. And I may have mentioned this at the September meeting, but basically there was a little bit of employee turnover in their call center, and they have since hired more than the employees that they had lost. And as you can see, that was then corrected for the months of August and September. And then moving on further, I just want to touch on the, on page 53, and 54, the campus door servicing performance. You will see that the average speed of answer was quite high for both programs, in excess of double or almost triple of the standard. And I reached out to Campus Door for a response or explanation. And basically Campus Door stated that, you know, due to COVID and the flow of the peak application season being altered, the peak season was a little bit condensed this year. And that overall, they made the strategic decision to really let the average speed of answer, you know, falter a bit, because they were really focused on timeliness of processing the applications and getting the applications out the door. With Campus Door knowing that most of the questions calling in were simply a, what is the status of my application, or what is the status of the document I just submitted? So Campus Door really tried to focus on processing the applications as quickly as possible, because many of the calls coming in, you know, most of those questions weren't substantial. But nonetheless, you know, we're obviously not looking for Campus Door to have metrics that are above the standard, and myself and my colleagues will continue to monitor Campus Door and UAS's performance moving forward. Are there any questions? All right, that would be it for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Shannon?
I am here.
Yep. Marketing and outreach?
Yeah. So we're going to go over, I mean, we do this every meeting, so I wanted to kind of switch it up a little bit. So on page 56, I just did a overview because we didn't really see a huge jump from last year, but I still wanted to highlight the activity we're seeing on the website. So for page 56, again, our continuous goal is to just build awareness about the CHESLA programs and continue to increase the loan volume. So from July 1 to October 25th, we had over 9,000 new users come on to the CHESLA website, and over 25,000 different page views, meaning they visited different tabs on the website, and over 15,000 sessions. And they're just defined as the group of activities that they do on the site while they're there. Top referrals came from CT Dollars and Cents, CT Office of Higher Education, CP Scholarships, WNPR, and FinAid.org. And then for social media, we decided to include that in there, a couple of things that we're doing. So we announced on our social media platforms the Employer Student Loan Repayment Program. We included legislators as recipients to the October quarterly newsletter we sent out. Jeanette did an interview on Metro Hartford Alliance Pulse of the region on September, which really she talked about both TIFA and CHESL, but specifically our programs. And I don't think Josh said this, but our spot ran on the pregame during the Game 4 World Series on October 24th. And I'm sorry if I said that wrong because I don't follow baseball, but I know that's big. And they also ran a spot is to run on round 3 and 4 of the Masters Golf Tournament in November. So those are the marketing strategies we have thus far. The image you see on this slide is something that we posted on social media as a branding message. And then the next slide, we have continued the CHESL outreach. We have started kind of the fall session of our financial aid basics presentation. And we have had a few high schools that we've done it virtually with. It's been quite an experience with parents and students that come on and are able to ask questions in regard to the presentation that we started last year or the beginning of this year. Where we just go over, you know, financial aid, paying for college. So we've done Stanford High School, Lewis Mills, Granville Academy, Manchester High School in Sports and Medical Sciences, and Litchfield that we did last year has asked us to come back again.
Shannon, this is Peter. Could you just back up one page? I have just a quick question for you on something you said. Right here, this is perfect. This sending the newsletter to the legislators. I'm just curious, is that a new initiative or have we been doing that and you're just citing that we're continuing to do it? Either way, I just want to say that I think it's great that we are doing it, whether it's a new initiative or not. I just think continuing to try to build those relationships and making people aware of CHESL is really important, and I think it's a great move. So I'm just kind of curious, have we been doing that with the legislators or is this a new initiative?
So specifically, I think we were sending individualized communications to legislators. We never included them in the actual like listserv for our newsletter. So they would get press releases and separate emails, but we decided to include them in the actual like listserv for our newsletter.
Great. I just think it's terrific in terms of just building and maintaining good relationships and making people aware of what CHESL does. So well done.
And also just want to mention it's part of it is to inform legislators of what CHESL is doing, but it's also because the legislators will post it on their sites or when their constituents call asking about, you know, higher ed financing, they can send them information about CHESL.
Yeah, good point, Jeanette. Yeah, it's all good. Thank you.
This is Julie. Just to follow up on that question, Shannon, could you just describe who exactly is on that distribution list of that newsletter? Because it is, you know, it's a really good piece. So who exactly is receiving that? What groups?
I could chime in here briefly. So we have, you know, financial aid directors and staff. We have high school counselors. We now have the legislators. And then anybody, quite honestly, that goes to our website and decides that they want to sign up for the newsletter. I believe overall we have, I think it's 1,400 or 1,500 people subscribed to the newsletter.
Great.
Thank you. That's great.
Okay, Shannon, back to you. Sorry for the interruptions.
No problem. I think I was on the last page. Yeah, so basically we're continuing with our virtual outreach to high schools that seek us out, but we also do send out communication to let them know that this is something that we provide virtually now. And again, I said, I think Litchfield has reached out for us to come for a second round virtually this time. And depending on the school, we've gotten a very array of questions, but it's going good thus far.
Great.
That's it for me, unless you guys have questions.
Any additional questions, Shannon? Okay. Thank you, Shannon. Nice review. Thank you. Natalia, scholarship update.
Yep. Hi, everyone. I just have a pretty quick scholarship update.
So in the last few months, we have awarded 2 certificate scholarships to students in the manufacturing certificate program at Naugatuck Valley Community College. Other than that, the number of applications that we've received are not as many as we expected. However, we are still working on different ways to market the program. Just in the last couple of days, I've re-emailed all of the institutions who offer healthcare and manufacturing certificate programs. So I've reached out to them again with the information and the flyer. And then we've also sent emails to every applicant who started an application but hasn't submitted it. We've just sent them reminder emails to submit the application. However, we suspect that the majority of the started applications are just undergraduate students who are confused about their eligibility. So although we haven't received as many, we're hoping it'll pick up, and we are still promoting it on social media, and we'll continue to try other efforts as well. Does anyone have any questions?
Any questions for Natalia? Okay, thank you, Natalia.
All right, thank you.
All right, I think the remaining agenda item is the calendar of meeting dates for 2021. I don't know if anyone has any questions on that. Jeanette, do we need a motion to adopt the meeting schedule? Do you know?
I believe you do need to vote on the meeting schedule.
Okay.
So moved. Marty Budd, I move to adopt these meetings.
Second. Dates.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. Does anyone at this point have a conflict with any of those dates? I know there many of them are ways out, but there's a motion and a second to accept the dates as presented. Any discussion? All right, all those in favor of adopting the schedule as presented, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any other business to bring before the board? Anything? Okay, well, it might seem a little premature, but I'll wish happy holidays to everyone because it won't be convenient again until 2021. So stay well, stay healthy, and is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you all very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Take care.